Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Shore. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Shore, it won't let you down.
Hello and welcome to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Shore 72-hour protection, with me, Niall McIntyre. It was a festival of football at the weekend, arguably the most action-packed Gaelic football weekend of the year, with four quarter-finals. Whether it lived up to it, I suppose that's what we're going to discuss today. And with me is my right-hand man, Lee Costello. And we have Alan Brogan as well, who has had a smile on his face all morning. So how's things, Alan?
Good, yeah, good. Good weekend for the Dubs. As you said, I'm not sure it was as a football fan last week, when the draws were made, it was like the excitement building all week. I'm not sure, as you say, it quite lived up to what we expected, but as a dub we're happy enough this morning. We'll take that any day, a 12-point win against Mayo.
He definitely will. It I suppose it was, just looking at the weekend as a whole, like the draws were perfect, so evenly matched, and one side of games, yeah. Really, apart from the Derry and Cork was tight enough, but apart from the Monaghan Armagh game, it was Tyrone disappointedly.
Oh yeah, just desperate stuff, to be honest. It was disappointing because we teed it up and there was so much build up, but I suppose we had two great weekends of football with loads of action and drama, and three in a row may have just been a bit too much for the heart.
Maybe that was it. It was like the Dublin of old, Alan, really, on Sunday. They're tight early on, rootless when they got the chances, and then kind of just took care of Mayo, got rid of them in the third quarter. Desi Farrell, he's urging people not to get carried away, but I suppose looking at that and how good they were yesterday, probably their best performance in a good few years, it's hard enough not to.
Yeah, it is. And I think, to be fair to Desi, like over the last couple of years, probably an issue Dublin had was probably the strength of the bench. It wouldn't have been the same calibre as it maybe it was towards the end of the six in a row and stuff. So I think to see Kieran Kilkenny coming off the bench yesterday, to see Jack McCarthy coming off the bench, I think the lads, knowing that in the background that we have these lads to bring in, is very comforting for the lads on the field, and maybe compared to Mayo, who certainly didn't have that strength coming off the bench when they needed it. But like I think Dublin, like Mayo were well in the match. I watched it closely in the first half. It was a very entertaining game of football, maybe completely unlike some of the other ones. There was a lot of kick passing. Dublin probably kick passed them more than they have in any game in the last number of years. Mayo the same. Like, so there was opportunity to deliver a quick ball in, which is obviously very pleasing for the spectators. Makes it a much better watch maybe than what some of the other games were. But I think like it hinged on kind of crucial moments. There's no doubt at half time Dublin decided to up the ante in the third quarter to see, could Mayo stay with them? But I think the second goal, like the mistake to let Paul Mannion get a toe on that ball, and it was finished very well by Cormac and Colin Pascal, to be fair. I could see Cormac coming in, and he likes a goal. Cormac, and I see he's going to go for this himself, but he kind of slipped as he came to the keeper, and he nearly had to hand pass it across, and it was a great finish. But I I'd say in his head he was lining up, I'm going to slide this in the bottom corner somewhere, but to be fair to him, they finished very well. But that was kind of the real turning point. I think after that, like, I think there was a period of 20, maybe 24 minutes where, like, either side of half time where Mayo didn't get a score, and at that level, that's just too long a period.
Yeah, it was brilliant from Cormac Costello, the way the ball broke out and he flicked it up,
chipped it up
lovely, like, yeah, in such a tight space. I suppose the question marks over Dublin coming into it were, you know, have they been road tested? The game they played against Roscommon, they were a little bit off that. They didn't really push up on Roscommon, maybe gave Roscommon a bit too much space, but it was a different ball game from them yesterday. They just watching them at the game, I suppose what summed it up was the forwards and the pressure they put the Mayo backs under was unbelievable, from pushing them, putting them under pressure even when they were back in their own half back line. We're frustrated at watching Gaelic football where teams are kind of just let have the ball and have free possessions and do what they want, but Dublin didn't give any of that yesterday.
Yeah, and maybe that was a bit of a shock to the system to Mayo. Their defenders are probably used to having time to play the ball around the middle of the field, wait for the opportunity, wait for the right moment to run, but they didn't get any of that against Dublin. And even on the kickouts, they put the Mayo goalkeeper under serious pressure on his kickouts, and he's a big boot of a ball, and kind of once or twice he did get it over the press, but you could see, I was listening to Kevin McStay last night, and he thought he managed it okay. And to be fair to me, he probably did manage it okay, but Dublin made it really, really hard. They put it under pressure on every kickout. Unlike the Dublin kickouts where Mayo were trying to put pressure on, but Klucko was still getting every kickout out. I was in the Hogan stand, and he picked Brian Howard out with a couple, left foot kicked down into the corner. Brian Howard made a run and three or four times, and just his ability to retain, Stephen Klucko's ability to retain kickouts is as we know, as good as what's out there, and that had a huge bearing on the match. Whereas on the other side, even though I thought Colin Reid did okay in his kickouts, he was under serious pressure every time he put the ball down.
He was. It was like a blue wave coming up against him, and you'd have felt sorry for him because there was no space and he just had to bomb it. He didn't really have another option, in fairness to him. Look, we'll talk about it a bit more, but first, Alan, you'd be familiar with this modern game. I think you're still playing with the Oliver Plunkett's intermediate team, and who might have a chance, a little birdie tells me, in the Dublin Intermediate Championship.
I am still playing a little bit, yeah. I'm not sure about having a chance in the Intermediate Championship, but we're going okay. We're Division 4, which is not a bad standard in Dublin. I don't play every game. I kind of play when I'm available, but... and in Division 4, there's a couple of teams, there's probably three or four teams that it's actually their first team in Division 4, so they obviously take it quite seriously. They're looking to get promoted to Division 3, whereas probably Division 4 is probably the right level for our second team to try to get young lads through and stuff. But a few weeks ago we were playing against St. Finian's out in Swords, if you know them, and I started on the bench and I was actually a few minutes late for the match, and when I got there, one of the lads on the sideline said to me, that's Andy Mallon there, isn't it? He was wearing number 6, and he's completely shaven head, had probably gone a little bit bald, and I hadn't seen him in a few years, and I thought, I wouldn't think he's got he's shaven headed yet, doesn't really look like him. So I went on about, but I started to see him play, and this fella, he was up and down, he was fit as anything, you know. So I said, yeah, maybe it is him. And after 5 minutes of the second half, I went on full forward. Andy was playing number 6, and as soon as I went into full forward, their coach was saying, Andy, go back on him. I was like, oh my god, I didn't sign up now for Andy Mallon to be marking me in an intermediate club match. So anyway, he came back on me, and it was him. Shook his hand, how are you, Andy? The game was in the melting pot at that stage. It was kind of tight enough. I think they were maybe a point up, but in the last 20 minutes he went up and he kicked 2 points in play from full back off me. So I'm happy enough when we're playing against lads that maybe haven't the inter-county experience, or I don't know what age he is, 36, 37, but he could probably still be doing a job for Armagh, I'd say, the nick he was in. So occasionally you meet lads like that, and they can be tough days, but I still enjoy it. That's the main thing.
That's the modern game, isn't it? Full backs bombing up the field.
Yeah, well, certainly fellas like him, he was well able to get up and kick a score, but I suppose you see it a lot now. Yeah, maybe not at intermediate level all the time, because generally the full backs aren't made for getting up to kick scores, but he was certainly well able.
Definitely. So the two brothers are playing with you as well?
Yeah, we played a game last week, actually. Paul still plays. He's captain of the team, actually. So, and Bernard was out last week. He played his first game of the year last week. So we might get a few championship games on over the summer now. So we might get three-man full forward line myself, Brennan and Paul at some stage.
Yeah, sure. Paul will be as fit as ever after his stint on Dancing with the Stars.
I would. He's in better nick than me and Bernard anyway, that's for sure. But I know he's decent now, to be fair. Paul's a big unit now, yeah. So when he gets one-on-one with someone in there, he can be dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, God help intermediate cornerback that might be faced with Bernard Brogan. No, Adam Brogan, Paul Brogan.
Can you imagine, like, Islevin, you're saying people maybe showing up just expecting or wanting some recreational level stuff and then come up against you boys, I'd be absolutely fuming. But like you say, in Dublin itself anyway, that's actually a really high level of football. But I'd love to go see that and see all the Brogan boys back in action, just like a throwback nearly.
So are you able to train as much as, like, make to most of the trainings? Or
I only go to an odd one, to be honest. Okay. I've kind of... I think that level is, that kind of level of football is more, like, I think for us should be more about feeding the senior team. So, okay. So like, it's actually a friend of mine manages the team, and I say to him, look, if there's young lads there, let's play the young lads to make sure they're getting the game time and stuff. So we can keep trying to feed the senior teams. But look, sometimes we're short, like every club, sometimes we're short and kind of longitudes on at the weekend. Half the lads have gone to longitudes. We need to field the team. So I didn't play at the weekend, but I saw a picture of the team. There was a few lads playing now that probably hadn't played in a couple of years. Good few years older than me now. So, but we managed to get a win. We beat Temple Oaks Kingsley Intermediate. So, but there was a few lads now that probably hadn't featured in a few years.
Well, so that's the thing, isn't it? That half the lads would be at the latter end of their career, and then half the lads we go into longitude. So how do you find the mix with the youngsters? Like, it's probably they're a different breed, I'd say, nowadays.
I don't know. It's I enjoy that side of, like, seeing young lads play, and I'd rather be on the line and let the young lads play than me in there. So, that's what I always say to manager. If there's young lads there, let the young lads play, and I'll come in at the end for a few minutes or whatever. I'm very conscious of kind of injuries and stuff, and like picking up an injury at this stage, and I get aches and sores after, like, but I've been lucky enough now in the last few years in my career that injuries have been okay, and I'm sure I'll get a bit of arthritis and time and stuff in a few, but I haven't been too bad. So I'm very conscious now. You don't want to be coming home now with a cruciate ligament injury or something like that, or into a cast. I had a problem with my wrist and it gets sore every now and again. I went to see a specialist and he said probably needs to be operated on again. You'd be 3 months in a cast. I was like, God, I'll wait until it's nearly hanging off before I go back into a cast for 3 months.
Yeah, but it's obviously a love for the club that keeps it going for you, because you're living out in Castleknock, and I suppose, as you said yourself there, trying to, sometimes you just have to fill the numbers, and it's the love of the club that keeps you coming back.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I still enjoy it. Like, when I go out and play, like, I still enjoy getting on the ball and giving a few passes and kind of kicking a few scores. Like, the fitness probably isn't where it needs to be, but you get out and you try your best for the team and stuff. That's all you can do, isn't it?
And is there any young lads coming through that we should keep an eye out for?
It's been a tough few years in Plunkett, to be fair. Like, we had a team where we obviously got the 3 county finals.
Yeah.
We lost the 3 of them, unfortunately. One after a replay, and our team aged very much at the same time. It was a very settled team for a long number of years, and then a few of us started to retire, so we dropped down to Division 2 a number of years ago. Now we're steady enough in Division 2, our senior team. And it's a small club, Plunkett's, like, even though it's probably well known because of the amount of over the last number of years we've been kind of lucky enough to have a good few lads on the Dublin squad or whatever. Like, Ross McConnell was on it for a while. Declan Lally was on it, he came and joined Plunkett. Jo came and joined Plunkett, obviously. So, like for the size of the club, we probably boxed above our weight for a number of years there. So, I suppose it's a period of rebuilding now. And like, Sean Bugler is obviously the obvious one coming to Plunkett, and I would have seen him from like a very young age. Was destined to make it, and I still think there's probably a bit more. He's probably quite enough yesterday. There's probably a bit more football in him as well. Like,
but it's maybe his best really season so far.
But I think his first season he got an all star nomination. But he's been very settled in the team now. He's probably fighting for his position for a number of years there, and he looks very settled now. And even if he was a bit quiet yesterday, but look, he does the simple, like, if you watch him, and I watch him very closely, he does the simple things really well. He links the play as a centre forward really well, and when he gets his opportunity to take lads on one-on-one, he has blistering pace and he can score as well. So I think himself and Colin Bascal have probably made a huge difference to that Dublin forward line this year, and probably put a little bit of pressure back on the likes of Kieran Kilkenny and stuff. Like I think to see Kieran on the bench yesterday, whilst we expected him to start, to see him there, is obviously a sign that there's a bit of strength and depth there now, and lads are having to fight for their place, and you can be sure Kieran now could not start yesterday, would have hurt him, so he'd be chomping at the bit now for the next, they'll probably have a rest for a few days and do two or three sessions maybe of an A's versus B's match next week, so that'd be interesting now because that competition for places is there.
You had Paul Gavin in Plunkett's for a while too, did you?
He came out. It was nearly like the last throw of the dice. We were trying to get that championship across the line, and he joined for a couple of years. We actually got knocked out by Castleknock in the quarterfinals that year. He did well for us. Played wing forward. He was probably coming to the end of his days as well, like myself. But unfortunately, didn't get across the line in the end. That's actually spoken a couple of times over the last couple of weeks about. I haven't kind of very many regrets in my football career in general, but kind of not winning a county final, and not for myself, more so for the people of the club and stuff, not getting that. Like, there was a lot of people put a lot of effort into that senior team over a number of years in Plunkett's, and kind of not getting that across the line for them is kind of one of the regrets. And I said yesterday, losing the 06 semi-final to Mayo was probably, they're probably the only two that really stick out in my head. And again, not for myself in 06, but more so for that group of players that had kind of come together under Tommy Lyons and then managed by Pillar Caffrey. Like, it was a very kind of close-knit, tight group or team or whatever. So I think kind of that team not getting to an All-Ireland final, and we mightn't have won it, but I think not getting an opportunity to play in the final for Pillar, his management team, and that group of players is another regret I have.
What a game that was, though. Like, I was marching up to the hill and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was brilliant, yeah. That was the Mayo came down to our end, yeah. Kind of people always ask me if that affected, but we actually started that game really well. We went 4 or 5 points up, so it definitely wasn't what happened before the game that beat us. It was probably kind of more so in the last, a bit of naivety maybe a bit of kind of thinking we had the job done, 7 up with 20 to go. You would expect to have the job done, but you know, kind of like Mayo, you can never write them off in any game, and just got caught in the hop by obviously a great score by Kieran MacDonald at the end, if you remember. Yeah, it was class. Mm-hmm. I think Andy Moran got a goal as well to get them back into it, I think. Yeah. That was disappointing.
Just on the county final losses, like, there was three in a space of 6 or 7 years. Obviously really tough, and they were tight ones as well, wasn't the last one only a point against Vincent's. And do you know, like, you obviously, when you look at your career, people think about the All-Ireland wins and all the great wins you had with Dublin, but like I say, a lot of people can probably empathise with the struggle too. And Plunkett's never won they've never won the Dublin senior championship. So,
like I said, like, it's a very small club out in the Navan Road, like hasn't a big catchment area. Like, our catchment area really only spreads from, say, the kind of top of the Navan Road, where St Bridget starts, and we're down as far as the Garda station in Cabra, so it's a very small area. So for Stephen play in three county finals is probably an achievement in itself. But yeah, like, the Vincent's one is probably, like, Vincent's, I think, were after coming off the back of their All-Ireland win, I think, or maybe it was the year before, and they were probably a better team than us that year, even though it's only a point or two, and I got a goal towards the end of it to maybe put a bit of respectability on it. But the other two, we played Bridget's in 2000, obviously local rivalry, in 2011 after winning the All-Ireland, so to, like, they'll make an excuse. We probably had a bit of a hangover from the All-Ireland win, and maybe we probably didn't get it together as well as we should have coming into that game. And Bridges, because they were a good team as well, they were kind of in their prime at that stage as well, had won a county final in 03, I think, so beat us 10-8 in a kind of dour enough game. But and in 2008, Kilmacud beat us after a replay. We were winning one the first game very well. I think Johnny McGee came on and got two goals, and they kind of levelled it up. So we had opportunities at both, and that was probably the one, like, we were very strong that year, kind of really in our prime, and maybe just didn't believe that we, like, small club against Kilmacud, maybe when it came to the crunch, didn't believe that we could beat them. But kind of looking back now, that was definitely one that got away. And if we had won that one, who knows? Like, we still had a good 5 or 6 years ahead of us. Who knows what might have happened? But it was.
Were you ever, was your father ever manager in any of those? Did you ever play under him?
No. He managed Paul's team underage, but he never managed at that level. He did manage a senior team in Plunkett's before we started to play, but not when we were playing now. So Mick Galvin actually managed the Mick Galvin, who's involved now with Desian's backroom teams, he managed us for 4 or 5 years from about 09 to, he was in charge when Bridges beat us. So we go. It was a good setup. Like we were well organised, but just unfortunately couldn't get it across the line. Yeah.
There you go.
We move on from that, will we?
Yeah, we move on from that.
Let's go back to Dublin Mayo.
Yeah. I think we will. We'll go straight into the Dublin Mayo game, and I suppose. Look, there was only 1 point in it at half time. But I suppose at that time, Dublin were, you know, they were turning the screw a small bit. Niall Scully had hit the post. You kind of felt the Jordan Flynn goal might, that it was ruled out that might affect Mayo. There was a breeze there. And at half time, you would have been a small bit worried for Mayo. But the worries were definitely confirmed straight away in the second half, really, because there was Dublin got 1-3 without reply in the first 5 minutes of the second half, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, at halftime, I thought Mayo were maybe slightly the better team, but they went in a point down, and it was just about how they were going to respond to it. And that was sort of my thinking watching the game, but it was Dublin who really turned it on. I wanted to ask Alan, actually, because I think my thinking before the match was I've just put a lot of emphasis and I put a lot of importance on Division 1 teams, I think, you know, and especially for like a Dublin, because they're always going to walk Leinster. And then, so to play Division 2 all season, then Leinster Championship, and then I think Roscommon's the only Division 1 team they played all year. I just thought, like, if you're never going to get that match intensity and stuff, but I'm obviously overthinking it, it isn't maybe as important as we think it is.
Yeah, like, it's hard to know. Dublin have been a little inconsistent, but then they probably haven't been really challenged yet in the last 4 or 5 games. And I saw them against Sligo in the last game in the group stage, and they obviously bet Sligo well. But I thought they moved it really, really well. Like in that game, they had 4 or 5 point fisted points, which could easily have been on another day could have been goals, and I think they maybe took the foot off the gas a little bit. I think Conor Callaghan in particular, if you watch him, he's ruthless against the top teams when he gets in on goal. But if Dublin are winning well against a perceived lesser opposition, he generally tends to just give the fist pass over the goal. Mm. He doesn't look to me like he likes to rub it in and really, really hammer teams, which is an admirable trait, I think, because that game was well over. He fisted a couple of points, but. Yeah, like at halftime yesterday, I was a bit the same. I was kind of a little bit worried, but I was thinking about it beforehand. And even if you look at the Kerry Tyrone match, so I had that game pitched very close. I had the Mayo Dublin match pitched very close. But after the Kerry Tyrone match, when I actually thought about it, I was like, so they've no one of the quality of David Clifford. I'm not even sure if they have somebody the quality of Paddy Clifford, even though Myler did a decent job on them. They did a good old battle. So Kerry individually have better players than Tyrone at the moment, there's no doubt about it. I thought the other mistake Tyrone made was not having Colin McShane, and I'm not sure was he carrying a knocker stuff, but just his presence. And you could see when he went in, he just attracts defenders to him because he's so dangerous. And I think with the Tyrone forward line, especially with the Canavans, maybe lighter, quicker footballers, having a fella like him in there just to support them as a foil or whatever, I think would have been a much better option for Tyrone. Unfortunately, when he went in, the game was over when Colin McShane went in, even though he did quite well. But when I thought about that game after, I thought there's a chance here that Dublin could beat Mayo well. If they perform, there's a chance they could beat them well, because I thought Dublin had the better individual players, had the better forwards and stuff. And there was a little bit of inexperience in the Mayo full back line. And I thought they were under pressure, especially when they came under pressure towards the end of the first half, start of the second half. I thought the Mayo full back line was under a lot of pressure. I thought Pádraig O'Hara, Cormac Costello, I think, was on Pádraig O'Hara, and he definitely looked under pressure against him. So it was a tough day for the Mayo full back line. As I said, there was a lot of space to kick into and stuff. So I thought that kind of played right into Dublin's hands. And I think the benches then obviously made a big difference too. Having Kieran Kilkenny and Jack to come off the bench compared to what Mayo had, I think was poles apart. And that ultimately told, even though by the time Kieran came in, the game was probably close to put to bed at that stage anyway.
Yeah, well, you could see it in the first 5 minutes of the second half that the Mayo backs were under savage pressure. The Colm Reap was under savage pressure with every kick out he was hitting. Dublin had all avenues closed off, so he had to go long, really. One thing I wanted to ask you, Alan, is there's been a lot of talk this year that, you know, forwards, that they have to be able to work as hard as they have to be able to work as hard as backs. And it even, you could see it in the way Monaghan were picking their team earlier in the year, that Jack McCarron mightn't start. Yeah. There was one day Jack McCarron and Conor McManus didn't start. The one thing that stands out with Dublin is that they're all so equal in how they defend, really. is everyone defends with the same like intensity and aggression. There's no like soft touch. Say McManus might be considered that way with Monaghan as a defender, that the lads will get away with him. Everyone seems to work equally hard in that Dublin forward line. And, you know, it's Mayo just couldn't deal with it, I suppose.
Yeah. I think, like, there's a couple of instances of that over the last few years. Like, if you look at Paul Mannion now, obviously he's known as an exceptional scorer, very accurate and stuff. But my kind of abiding memories of Paul Mannion is his tackles back, some of the interceptions back in the full back line, the way he tackles, the way he forces dispossessions. And he's nearly as well known for that now as he is for any of his forward play. Cormac Costello is another one who, like, if you talk about soft touches, he might have been perceived as maybe doesn't work as hard back as some of the others. But if you look at him now, and it's probably because he's had to do it to hold on to his place in the team. Because if you don't do it in that team, there's an equal forward that will come in and is going to work harder than you. So if you look at Cormac Costello now compared to when he started his career, like, he never stops working now. He's always looking for opportunities to get tackles on. He'll work back as far back as he has to go, and that's probably cemented his place in the team. But kind of, you're right, there's like, when Kieran comes in, he's working, he's getting dispossessions. All the Dublin forwards can dispossess it if they get the opportunity, and I'm not sure that's the same in other teams. They've probably worked, I'm not sure it's even the same in Kerry, to be honest, which I'm not sure if the Kerry forwards maybe work as hard as the Dublin forwards. And it is, that's something that's kind of evolved with Dublin since Pat Gilroy's time, to be honest with you. There's not many left from that era, but it's like, it's followed on from there. Certainly in Pillar Caffrey's time. Now, we didn't know then maybe what we know now, but we didn't work as hard as a forward unit, as even though we thought we might have been, but we certainly didn't work as hard as a forward unit as the current six Dublin forwards do. And I suppose that's an admirable trait in probably the best team we've ever seen, probably, is that they're probably the hardest working team as well. And I think that's come from, they've obviously worked hard on how they tackle and how they set traps around the field for to try to get 2-on-1s to force turnovers and stuff. And it's a huge part of the game now, is how you force turnovers. And the higher up you can force a turnover, obviously the better chance you have of getting a score off, you know. So yeah, it's something they've worked really hard on.
Just on, you mentioned the Pat Gilroy era. I just remember meeting Bernard's book, your brother, and he was talking about how maybe he was one of the more reluctant ones to track back. You know, he wanted to set up and, you know, maybe he stay up front and everyone else track back and he could be the outlet. As a such, like, do you remember that time? What eventually won him over? Because then Bernard became one of the best. Like, he could strip the ball off a lot of defenders and create chances.
Like, I think Pat used Bernard as a bit of a, I don't know, what would you call it? Like,
he said sacrificial lamb.
Sacrificial lamb, that's the words I'm looking for.
That's the word he said himself. So.
And to be fair to Pat, he probably spoke to Bernard about it first. Now, Bernard did have to improve that, and he did, as we know, and he worked really, really hard for the team. But he used Bernard as that sacrificial lamb. So if you're not willing to do this, then you won't be on the team. And he moved Bernard onto the bench. Then he played him wing forward and stuff, doing all this sort of stuff. Put him back. He made him play wing back in training matches and stuff, just to, as that sacrificial lamb, to show that kind of no one's above kind of working hard for the team. And like, that was very much the basis on what Pat's philosophy was made of, was that you just work as hard as you can, and then we'll add the rest of it on. And it's funny, like, I know we were speaking about Armagh and how defensive they were yesterday, and that's like, Kieran McGinney's 7 years at that, and I understand you get your defensive structure right first, but the forward play, like, Pat moved his forward play on after 12 months of focusing on defence. Six backs stay back. So in his first year in the National League, the wing backs weren't allowed to attack. The six backs just stayed back in their six positions. So we had a solid base at the back. And then that obviously evolved over time. And the next year we started to work a bit more in the forward play, having wing backs attacking and stuff. But the whole philosophy was based on having a solid foundation at the back and stopping the other team scoring. And then obviously, like, it evolved from that. We weren't as defensive the following year, but it, like, in Pat's first year, people look back, like, it was 14 behind the ball and he just stopped the other team scoring. And certainly in league matches and stuff, that was all we worked on. There wasn't even talk of forward play. It was just get that foundation right from the back. And I think that's kind of evolved over the last 10 or 12 years, but it's still ingrained in lads' minds that you get your defensive duties right first, and whatever happens after that is a bonus.
Was it hard to get used to that, Alan? Like, say when you started out, you were probably this scoring forward, and, you know, you probably think, you know, I'm scoring, and working hard isn't probably like your number one facet in the game. And even when you mentioned about Brogan Bernard there playing wing back in training games, like, it was Like, when did that change kind of come in? And is it, was it hard for like scoring forwards to get used to that initially?
Yeah, it probably was. But I think at that stage, we'd have done anything like to maybe try and even get to an All-Ireland final. Like I'd lost four semi-finals. But I think the real turning point was, so Pat came in 09 and he kind of followed on from what Pillar Caffrey had been doing. Like, we were very close under Pillar Caffrey. Obviously lost a couple of semi-finals. But Pat kind of followed on in that vein, playing a similar style of football with kind of some similar personnel, one or two changes. But the loss against Kerry in 09, really, he ripped up the playbook after that and we just went back to, right, let's not even talk about forward play. We're just going to get our defensive structure right. It started in 2010 and six backs stayed back with the two midfielders and was up to the half forwards be back. It was up to the four forwards to get the scores and just make sure you get enough scores to win us the match. So, like, if you look back at the scores, our scoring rate probably went way down, but what we conceded went way down as well, and that formed the basis going forward. But I think, like, I knew things had to change. Obviously, like, I'd lost four semi-finals, and whilst we'd be involved in great attacking games, we weren't winning the big games. Like, the better teams were like I said, the, like, especially Tyrone, probably the Kerrys were tactically better than us, so we knew we had to improve that, and that was probably the biggest thing that Pat brought to me.
Definitely. You mentioned there that, you know, we're talking about how hard the Dublin forwards work, and every one of them works hard. And is that, I suppose, the difference between the Dublin and Kerry setups, maybe, is that Clifford is kind of given, David Clifford's given maybe a small bit more of a license to just kind of wait up. And you see him sometimes, if a lad is running out of defence, he kind of leaves it off to another lad. Like, is that kind of the difference in between the Dublin and Kerry set up, and I suppose what will, if they meet later on in the year, that will be the difference, is whether Clifford's, I suppose, genius down the other end of the field can kind of overpower the work that maybe Dublin are doing on the other end. Like,
yeah, it's like, I'd be seeing Dublin yesterday, like, there was gaps for Mayo to exploit, and Mayo got opportunities to kick the ball. Ryan O'Donoghue got inside a couple of times on his own. Tommy Conroy caused a lot of trouble where he got one-on-one with defenders. And I would think if Dublin gave Kerry that space, like, all things being equal, I think they'll have to improve that, Dublin. Like, they will have to cut off those kind of kick passes in. And that's, you talk about the work right in the forwards around midfield, like the front eight. And we'll have, if Dublin do play Kerry in an All-Ireland final, which most of us will probably expect, that's what will happen. With all due respect, they'll have to work hard around to kind of limit that supply of ball into David Clifford and to limit that quality, because if he gets the type of ball that maybe Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy were getting yesterday, he could cause a lot of trouble, like, because the lads were getting one-on-one, and, you know, if he gets one-on-one with a defender, it's very difficult to stop him, and like to be goal opportunities. If Dublin play like that, there'd be goal opportunities for Kerry, which is not what you want with a David Clifford on the field. So I think Dublin, when Desi looks back at it, even though it was a very strong third quarter display, I think the fourth quarter of the game is kind of over. There's lots of stuff to improve on for Dublin, and maybe Dublin and Mayo do that to each other. They kind of draw each other out into this free flowing game of football, and that probably suited Dublin yesterday. But I think against Kerry, you'd need to be a little bit more cagey with making sure your sweeper is back and you're covering off in front of David Clifford. And
Do you think that the Roscommon game, because, you know, a lot of the talk was actually about how football is ruined now because of the possession thing. Roscommon held on to the ball, was it like 6 minutes or something? Do you think that, and all of the stick that Dublin got, because they seemed really passive then, they let them have the ball, Desi Farrell took them in and was like, you know, you never let a team have the ball for that long again. Yeah. You got to get a hand on, because the crowd just went flat, you know, and it just played completely into Roscommon's hand. And a lot of people were saying at the time that this is maybe a blueprint in how to play Dublin, but really what it's maybe done now is woke Dublin.
Brought Dublin out. Woken the beast. Yeah, maybe. It's like, I think Dublin are happy to play it either way. Like, and like against Monaghan in the semi-final, that's going to be a completely different game than what we saw yesterday. So Dublin are going to have to be a lot more patient. Like Monaghan are very strong defensively. They kind of do that 13-14 behind the ball really, really well. So it will be a different challenge from Dublin. Like, I would expect Dublin will have the players to get over Monaghan, but they will make it difficult for them. And like, Monaghan, don't know how many All-Ireland semi-finals they've been into, but that game yesterday, it's like a close game can bring you on so much. Like, and I think when you're in a close game like that, it exposes some of the cracks you have that you can work on for the next day. Whereas with Dublin or with Kerry, when you win a game well, it's a bit more difficult to find what the issues were, maybe because you weren't tested as much as you should have been. So I think Monaghan kind of going into the game are probably in a slightly more advantageous place in Dublin because they've been tested a little more. Just come back to the Roscommon thing. I think you're probably right in that. I think they decided, right, we can't let a game go like that again. We have a kind of duty or responsibility to try and play a bit of football here, so let's go out and take the ball. I think you could see that yesterday. They pressed way higher up the field to try and force turnovers. And maybe they're kind of peaking at the right time and they're just managing games and stuff, and there could be a little bit of that as well. But because they certainly upped the ante a little bit yesterday in terms of kind of going after the kickouts, going after the Mayo defenders, not giving them any time in the ball and kind of forcing turnovers higher up the field. So I would expect to see a little bit more of that against Monaghan as well. Yeah,
it probably was a case of them upping the ante when the stakes get higher. Dublin have done it so many times down through the years that we've watched them. One man who struggled yesterday was Páirc Ó'Hara, and Colin Basquel was the man he was marking, and he really struggled to kind of, he wasn't able to keep up with him, and on the turn and just when he became one on one, he was under real pressure. I was surprised initially that Ó'Hara was kept in the full back line. I mean, Ó'Hara made his name that day when Mayo beat Dublin in the 2021 semi-final, but he was marking Kieran Kilkenny that day, so he was more out towards the half-forward line. And maybe looking at him as a player, that kind of role might suit him better, because Enda Hessian has been such an impressive player for Mayo throughout the league. He was one of their best players. We remember the brilliant goal he got, but he was brilliant defensively as well. And, he was brought on after 32 minutes yesterday. But it could have been, like, the way... Ó'Hara just didn't seem to have the pace for Basquel. And that was probably a mistake from the start for Mayo.
It probably was. I may be wrong. I think he was actually marking Costello at the start and then got moved on to... And then that obviously didn't work out either. It was just having one of them days, to be fair.
He was sick last week, in fairness, to miss the match. Yeah. So there's that could be a thing.
But I take your point as well that, like, he was marking Kieran Kilkenny that other day, and a little bit maybe a deeper role suits him, because he's sort of a... Like, he commits to tackles. You know, you're always seeing him. Every time there's a goal chance around, he's always one of the ones, like, he'll put his head where you wouldn't put your boot and he'll dive in. But sometimes when you're so near goal and you're defending that way with 100% commitment, you know, you leave gaps in players like Costello and Basquel. You know, they can expose them. You don't want to blame too much on him, for sure, but it was definitely an off day for Ó'Hara, and a day you'd want to forget.
I'm not sure like how much support he had either. In the current game, you don't expect to see one-on-ones like that, and we haven't seen one-on-ones like that in a long time. And I think with Colin Basquel and Cormac Costello, those lads, once they get their turning as sharp as they can and they go straight at you, sometimes you see them coughing up turnovers and stuff, but I wouldn't be annoyed by that, because you know when they're playing like that, they're going straight for the juggler. That occasionally they're going to get caught by two or three men, but just the two lads are so direct. So a fella like Páirc Ó'Hara, I agree with you, if he's on Kilkenny, who maybe isn't as direct as the two lads, if he makes a mistake, he has a bit of cover behind or whatever. But it's a tough job to mark those, especially in the form they're in. Like, the two of them are so quick, lethal finishers. Colin Basquel's having the season of his life. Cormac Costello, fantastic footballer as well. Like, he's such a good shooter. He wants to take you on all the time. He's a great ball carrier. So it's a tough job without much support back there. And at times the Mayo sweeper was back, but
well, they did. Who was sweeping? Because it's hard to tell. I didn't feel like they did in the second half at all. And I don't know, Dermot O'Connor.
He was drifting back at times.
Like a midfielder would do that. Do you know? I mean, I wasn't too sure what Mayo's plan was in terms of trying to cut out the supply from Dublin, especially when they were kicking it.
Yeah, it was man on man for a lot. I was watching a lot of it, and as the play was building, say from the Dublin full back line, you could see the Dublin forwards were coming together. They were nearly lined up straight. The Mayo defenders were with them, and then as it got to the half back line or towards midfield, the Dublin forwards were breaking left and right. And I thought that kind of gave opportunity for like Fenton and James McCarthy to give kick passes in, and we haven't seen that from Dublin in a long time, because most teams set up so defensively they don't get that opportunity. So I'd say it was a game Dublin really enjoyed. They could kind of get back to playing football. the way they want to. But I think they're so experienced now that kind of depending on how a team's set up with them, they can change the way they play very quickly. So if Mayo had a lot of men backed up and are happy to hold on to the ball and try and punch holes with kind of late runners and hand passes and stuff, or if there's space to kick, you can see Fenton, James McCarthy, they want to kick. The first thing they want to do is they want to kick the ball in, and for the likes of Cormac Costello and Colin Bascal, that's the game they want, the ball coming in quick where they can take their men on one on one. And look, it paid dividends yesterday. The two of them were excellent.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that at times Bascal and Costello, they can lose the ball and they take the risk, they go, they always go, you know, route one, and will go straight at their defender, try and put it up to them anyway. They were the best two Dublin forwards yesterday, but they've become more consistent in that they don't seem to lose the ball. Like, yeah. I don't think either of them lost the ball yesterday.
Yeah. Like, I think if you look at Colin Bascal, kind of in particular, he's been there a few years. I would have seen him played against for Plunkett against Ballyboden, and he's like, he's serious pace. And I always thought since I saw him when he was kind of 19, 20 that he has the football in him to play into county with Dublin as a regular starter. But he's kind of struggled for the last number of years to nail down a place. So I'd say he's worked hard on his end product, because that's, like, he's a great ball carrier and stuff. Maybe his end product, he puts the head down a little bit. Maybe his end product hadn't been what it needs to be the last number of years. But as you say, I'd say he's worked hard on that with the coach and stuff to make sure if he goes on those runs that he's not getting forced down blind alleys and being turned over, like, to make sure he's either getting his pass off or getting a shot off the end. Because you could see yesterday, when it looked like he was going down blind alleys, as maybe he might have done a couple of years ago, he goes down an end line, two Mayo defenders come in and strip the ball off. And you could see yesterday, he tried it, right, that's not on. And he turned back and he kind of shoveled the ball back out, recycled the ball back out or whatever. So he's definitely conscious of it.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't want to take that out of guys, because that's what makes them exciting. That's what makes them special. That ability to carry the ball and take defenders on and make defenders commit themselves. And, like, to be fair to him, his finish for the goal, like the first goal, was it was a great win, obviously, from the high ball in. But it's like he finished
it calm.
He finished it with his instep. It looked like he kind of blasted it and he miscued it a little bit. It went in anyway. But when I watched it last night, like, he finished that with his instep into the corner. Like, it was a beautiful finish, to be fair to him. So just shows how far he's come in terms of his end product, because that's, I think, the one bit that was missing for him over the last few years, and he seems to have found that now.
And he's on
5-14, I think. In the championship.
Yeah, he's top scorer from play.
Like, that's remarkable score. Yeah. I was thinking coming in, like, 2002, Ray Cosgrove got 6.23. You're probably too young to remember that, but he got 6.23 that championship, and the country was raving about him. Mm. And I say there was a few frees in that, but Colin Bascal's now at 5.14 from play or whatever it is. Like, it's serious scoring in what's a much more defensive game now than it was a number of years ago. So it's been a great season for him. He's I'd say he's happy with himself this morning.
And I'd say, like, he's just unlucky too that he's always had to compete with this unbelievable Dublin forward line to get a place, and he probably wasn't even doing a lot wrong.
Yeah, no, he's fought hard for it. Like, he's had to kind of hang around for kind of 4 or 5 years. He's probably been in and out of the team, a couple of false dawns and stuff, but he's really improved. His finishing has improved this year, and like I say, the space he was given yesterday to take defenders on is kind of music to his ears. So I'd say he really enjoyed it. And I think as inside forwards, you wouldn't be used to that sort of game
anymore,
particularly with Dublin. And that's why I always say, like, I look at it, and even though I lost, this team has won more than I ever won. But God, when you look at it some days, like, God, I'd hate to be an inside forward. They're all you're doing is hoping to win the ball and you're getting hit, you're just laying it off. Whereas, like, to see the lads yesterday have an opportunity to take the men on one-on-one. And the Mayo lads had it as well. It made for a much more entertaining game of football. And I don't expect we'll see it the next day, but it was good while it lasted.
Yeah. Probably not. It was good while it lasted, and it was good for Mayo too, because O'Donoghue was going well. He got 3 points from play. He was making hay with the balls that Aidan O'Shea was winning and throwing out to him. And Tommy Conroy's pace was causing Dublin, like, serious problems. He ran inside James McCarthy one time. He got 2 from play. And, you know, I suppose that was the problem, and it was a credit to Dublin that they just didn't let Mayo get the ball to those boys in the second half, and that really was the end of it for Mayo because they just had to run. That was really their only outlet, and especially when they took off Aidan O'Shea, which was a small bit confusing that he was taken off so early, I would say.
I was surprised, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
he'd caused trouble. You know, anytime he's in there, like, he's... like he needs watching, whether he's playing good or bad or is anything coming off him, he needs watching. And I just I thought it was strange. Now there was a lot of damage done by the time they took him off. There was probably no way back anyway, but I was surprised to see him going off, because he had caused trouble in the first half. Like he'd won a couple of kickouts, he'd won a ball inside that he laid off to Tommy Conroy for a score, so he'd been heavily involved in the game. And look, whatever you say about Aidan O'Shea, and he some people think he's great, some people think he's not so great, but he needs watching, and he's a smart footballer. Probably hasn't got the legs to be out the field anymore. Like he'd probably be happier enough for them out around midfield if you're playing against them, but in full forward he's definitely a handful. And I think when he went off, it's a bit like Cathal McShane with Tyrone. He just gives a focal point. He takes the attention of a defender too. When he wins it, you can see defenders being drawn to him. He's good to slip a pass off, as we saw with that little pass to Tommy Conroy. So I thought it was a strange call to take him off so soon. Yeah.
One man I wanted to ask you about was James McCarthy, and like he's as fit as ever. And so many times in the second half, he just took off, and he's faster than most lads on the pitch and nobody can get close to him. You would have been there when he came in 2010, Alan, so like did you know straight away that this lad was something special?
Yeah, well he came in 2000, towards the middle of 2010, he was probably 3 stone lighter than what he is now. He's put a bit of bulk on, so he's a different footballer now than he was then. But you could see, like he just has that aggression. He has that bit between the teeth. He's never beaten, and you could see, I know he gets personally hurt by kind of criticism. Like he'll never admit it, but he gets by kind of criticism of Dublin or
really
him. So he gets the bit between the teeth, and just the way he plays, I think, is just inspiring for lads around him. Like he's a quiet enough character in the around the dressing room and stuff. Like he wouldn't be kind of shouting and roaring and stuff, but he kind of typifies everything that's good about this Dublin team. And like when he does go, like it's funny, we were talking about it last week as if it was last chance saloon for the likes of him, and then he comes out and puts in a performance like that. Like if you looked at him yesterday, you'd say, gee, he's 3 or 4 or 5 years left in him, no problem, you know. So maybe we were writing him off a little bit too soon. But like again, he was given a bit of space to carry the ball yesterday because it was like a bit more open. He was able to, like, just that stride he has when he gets going, he's just so difficult to track. And he got off a couple of times. It's funny, I saw Tommy Conroy going back after him once or twice, and he's lightning quick. So he needed someone like him to even to catch James, you know. So he certainly still, I'm not sure what age he is now, 33, is he?
33 or 4.
That was an amazing performance by him. And he even managed, like, he kicked the score off his left foot and everything. I didn't even know he could kick it with his left foot, and he got a score off.
He'd
be a happy man again today. But I think he's, as I say, last year's kind of defeat to Kerry would have hurt him so much. So you could see yesterday in a big game, he had the bit between the teeth for that, and he really took the game to Mayo, as I thought Brian Fenton did as well, in a different sort of way. I thought Fenton's he's such a calm and influence around the middle. Like he never gets
they're perfect mix, him and McCarthy.
Yeah, perfect mix, because like James is a bit more robust, a bit more aggressive, whereas but I saw Fenton last night. Now I didn't see it on the field. I was watching the Sunday game last night. You could see when the final whistle went, like you could see him pumping the fist and stuff. And I kind of hadn't seen that sort of stuff from him in a long time now. And actually, I've rarely seen that sort of stuff from him, because he's usually very calm. He doesn't. But to see him pump the fist like that and kind of let a roar out at the end of that game kind of showed what it meant to them and how much they wanted to get over the line.
Well, about 15 minutes earlier, remember when the kind of row broke out between the two teams? Around the Mayo half hour line, the second half, Fenton was bullying and he was pointing at Killian O'Connor, whatever went on there, I don't know, but he was fired up. And that you mentioned there that Fenton is kind of the calm and influence on McCarthy, you could see that. There was a perfect example of that in the first half when McCarthy had won a free against Dermot O'Connor, and Dermot O'Connor was kind of just standing in McCarthy's way, and McCarthy just pushed him in the face and got the free overturned. And McCarthy, you could see, and it probably goes back to that bite that you talked about that he brought into this game, having been hurt from last year. Like he has, and Fenton came over to him then seconds later, just, you know, calm down, James. Do you know? But it is, it's that aggression that he has, and he still has it. And you mentioned he get hurt and take it personally if Dublin lose. Like, that's the kind of player you want as a teammate. And I suppose John Small strikes me as the exact same.
Yeah.
Just a,
they're cuffing the same cloth, definitely. And like you mentioned that incident, but I didn't exactly see what happened there, but I could see Fenton pointing at Killian O'Connor. But to be fair to Killian O'Connor, like, he's probably in the latter stages of his football career now. But he's that same sort of player. Like, he wants to get involved in everything. And I'd say that's what was wrong with Fenton. He came in, Killian O'Connor kind of came in from nowhere and might have blown that situation up. But that's what it's a big day in Croke Park. That's what you want from your team. And like, I think if there's a criticism maybe of the Mayo, of some of the Mayo forwards now, like, they maybe don't have that same bite that a Killian O'Connor would have. Like, he would be involved. He's involved in everything while still performing, but he's like, he doesn't take a backward step from anything. Yeah. And that's an admirable trait as well. And I think some of the other, like, obviously likes of Ryan O'Donoghue, Tommy Conroy, they have talent, but I'm kind of yet to see the same bite from them maybe that the likes of Killian O'Connor has or has had over the last kind of 10 or 12 years. So that's certainly something I think the Mayo forwards need to develop, you know.
Yeah, isn't that what you want, though? A teammate who's just, he's going to take the fight to the other lads and he's not going to step back from Anton. And I know sometimes it can boil over, but like, it gets you fired up as well when you see your teammate, whether it's James McCarthy or Killian O'Connor, John Small, horsing into lads and not stepping back from Anton.
No, that's it. Yeah, and I thought actually German O'Connor was nearly the best at trying to grab the game at the scruff of the neck, because even when it was gone, he was so direct and he was trying to make things happen. He took a goal chance that was never really a goal chance, but he was just so desperate, you know, to keep going. And I found him very admirable to watch, and it was maybe a sort of different way he was trying to take it, you know, with his actual game and the way that he was playing. But no, absolutely, because, you know, you're getting beat on the scoreline. It can be a little bit embarrassing, and of course it teeters on, you know, getting frustrated and getting them and crossing that line. But you absolutely want to show that we're not here to be pushed around. Enough's enough. And I definitely would feel a lot better of having a teammate like Killian O'Connor coming in and starting a few rows and I roll about in the floor.
Would them players, Alan, would they be like that in training, like James McCarthy and John Small, having this kind of raw aggression?
It would come out, like, kind of dependent on the context of the training game or the drill and stuff like. But when it got into the trenches and training and stuff, those two lads definitely, they wouldn't stand back from anything. And I would imagine Killian O'Connor is driving the standard in the Mayo train. And you need that, because when you go into battle against the likes of the Tyrones, the Mayos, the Kerrys or whatever, that's what's going to happen. You're going to be challenged physically and mentally. And if you're not prepared to front up to it, you'll be found out pretty quickly. So, and I think that's what the likes of James and John Small and stuff. And I think Conor Callaghan, in a different sort of way as well, like Conor Callaghan,
a bit calmer, maybe.
He's a bit calmer than the boys, but he's never pushed around either. And if he's asked a question of physically, like, he'll respond in his own composed way. You know, so I think him in there is he kind of leads that forward line very well as well, and the lads know they won't be pushed around when he's in there, because he's a bit smaller than the boys, but he's strong as an ox.
Yeah, and Lee Gannon is a new one, and the same kind of cut from the same cloth, really, because I noticed this just after half time. Dermot O'Connor obviously started the second half. He went to wing forward and was kind of walking around by the sideline, as a lot of wing forwards do, kind of just to open the pitch up. And I could see Lee Gannon, he was about 5 or 10 yards in from the line, and he was just there kind of pointing at Dermot O'Connor, like, come on, come into me, like, are you scared of me or what? Like, so, but he's
a bit of mind games, that's good old-fashioned cornerback mind games.
Definitely. Yeah. He's robust in the same sort of way. Like,
absolutely. And then another example, well, I haven't mentioned Dublin over the years, obviously, Philly McMahon.
Yeah.
And I'd heard an interview from him recently where he brought up your name. Was it a training session or something? And he maybe let tempers flare and he had a go at you.
It was a trial match, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It was a trial match, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if his recollection of that story is 100% now, but I actually texted him about it afterwards. I said, any more of that talk now, Fillion?
Well, go and tell it. What's your version of the story?
I can hardly remember, right? We had I think it was like trial matches, but we had a competition where kind of regions played against, so 4 or 5 Dublin regions, we were Dublin North West or whatever, or Dublin North, so us, Bridget's, whoever else, and then we were playing against, obviously, Dublin, not sure what area they were, but it was kind of Ballymun, Nafina, whoever else, and there was a bit of a row at the start, and I think Paul and Philly were in the row, and I think Bernard went into the row, and I probably wouldn't be like Bernard. I think I went into Philly said I went in to break it up. It wouldn't be like me to be going in breaking up the breaking up the railroad, or I wouldn't be swinging now, but I'd be in pulling a dragon, like. Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting. Ah, you wouldn't want to take Philly on the rail anyway. Yeah.
No, absolutely. This is not a call out.
Yeah. Look, that's enough talk about Dublin and Mayo. We'll take a quick break now to look at the Sure No Sweat quiz. In partnership with our friends at Sure, official statistic partners of the GAA, we're now going to look at the most eye-catching stats from the championship weekend. This week's winner is Christine Farrelly, who told us that Meath and Down met in the 1991 All-Ireland Senior Football Final. They'll obviously meet again in the Tailteann Cup Final in 2 weeks' time, so we're all looking forward to that. But this week's question is, who is, at this stage of the championship, the top scorer from play in the Gaelic Football Championship? So now it's up to you, our audience, to give us the answer to this stat-related question on our social media to be in with a chance of winning some Sure teamed prizes. The winner will be announced on the show next week. Well, similar enough pattern, Lee, I'm sorry to bring this one up now. Obviously, a very disappointing one for you as a Tyrone man, and yourself and Stephen O'Neill was here last week, Alan, and the two boys. Honestly, I was trying to calm them down with all this optimism and all this, oh, Tyrone are coming, they're in the long grass and they're going to do it. But unfortunately for them, it didn't work out yesterday. Lee, they imploded in the second half, and I suppose the stat that screams out at you is that this game was 6-6 after 27 minutes, Tyrone playing against a strong breeze, and then 27 minutes later, 54 minutes gone, Tyrone hadn't scored again, and Kerry had got 1-8 without reply. So game over in... what happened?
It was so disappointing, because I would say actually last Monday with Stevie, that's probably the least hyped I was, because I just got progressively more and more as the week went on, and I was off all weekend because we're at a wedding in Tyrone, and that's all anyone talked about was the match. And you know, and see by the end of it, I was like, no, we're definitely going to beat Kerry, 100% we're going to go back to the days. And then I was on a low after watching that. It was really, really tough to watch. But I will say that the following day, because I'm a really busy guy, I had a 30th, and there was a lovely family there. And there were four kids, and they were head to toe in Galbally gear, Tyrone gear. I was like, I'll give them a shout out. It was Daniel, Michal, Matthew, and Eamor Mullen. And they were all still very optimistic, and they got over it very quick. And I'm hearing that they're a good footballer, so they'll maybe, the future's looking bright. But in the short term, I'd be very concerned. The biggest stat I was most concerned about, Kerry scored 111 out of turnovers. Like, when you think of Tyrone and Kerry games, that's Tyrone's bread and butter. You know, they out Tyrone. Like, it was just so difficult to watch. It looked like they conceded things. They sat back, let Kerry have the ball. The kickouts all went short. So, like, I know they allowed Tyrone to have the long or the short kickout, but you've got Con Kilpatrick and you've got Brian Kennedy, and there was question marks over the Kerry midfield going into this match. So put it in high, let's test them. And I know the Kerry midfielders did brilliant the whole game, but they were never contested. Do you know, we didn't even try to ask any questions of them. I don't know. Like, I was just scratching my head watching that match, to be honest.
Well, one thing that definitely stood out was the appetite and the intensity that Kerry brought to their tackling. One from Adrian Splann epitomised it early on when Michael O'Neill had about 20 yards on him running up the line, and Splann takes off like a sprinter. And in fairness, he's known for that kind of work rate, and he'll do anything to get the ball back. And he definitely adds a lot to the Kerry forward line that way. It was definitely Kerry's best display this year, and there seemed to be a kind of renewed fire in them, I suppose, after a bit of criticism they've taken.
Yeah, like you say, all the talk during the week was of the Tyrone physicality, the Tyrone tackle, how will Kerry cope with that, and like even all the box pops and the little video stuff was all clips. Like the amount of times I saw the clip of from 03 or whatever year that was, like, so maybe they started to play into the Tyrone psyche, thinking like, and there's this perception that you think Kerry are going to come out and they want to play a nice fancy game of football, unless they don't. Like Kerry are dogs as well, and they have to be, like, and if you look at their defenders, Graham O'Sullivan, Thomas Sullivan, like, they're tough dogs, yeah. Tough mm-hmm. hard cornerbacks, like, so maybe Tyrone fell into that trap of thinking we're the ones that are going to bring the physicality, and Kerry will want to play football. So, but, and it was completely the other way. Like, Kerry brought the physicality, and maybe Tyrone, just maybe all that talk during the week just fed in a little bit, and they just looked like they just weren't ready with it, because, as you say, the amount of turnovers and stuff, they just couldn't cope with the physicality and the intensity that kind of Kerry brought. And it was kind of a role reversal of what we're generally used to. But it's a bit like, and I've been on the receiving end of that in Dublin myself, where you go into this game thinking we're going to have a nice open game of football. It's not like Kerry, more often than not, are more physical and more intense than most teams. So I think you need to be very, like, if you're playing Kerry, you need to be prepared for that. Yeah, they have lovely footballers. How do we stop Clifford? But all over the field, Kerry bring an intensity that maybe teams don't expect.
It must be hard to take as a Tyrone man that, you know, Tyrone didn't really seem to come to the pitch of the battle like Kerry did. And I mean, what stands out for me is the them interceptions Kerry made. The backs were putting themselves, and the forwards too, Paddy Clifford getting stuck into Conor Myler. The backs were making interceptions that you wouldn't have, like, they weren't favourites to win these balls. You'd have memories of Gavin White sprinting out of defence, and he's just an unbelievable player, and Tyrone just couldn't get near him. Yeah. When he was running out of defence. But Tyrone just seemed, and maybe there was warnings about this earlier in the year, that they were a small bit passive. And like, you think back to the league, remember how disappointing they were against Mayo that day? Yeah. Like, it was terrible. And they had some poor, they'd just been inconsistent all year, I suppose, Lee. And maybe we had read too much into their win over Donegal, thinking that, you know, they're back now and this is Tyrone.
Yeah, I don't think at any point of this year I thought Tyrone were back in terms of the way that you would know Tyrone to be, but I was really, really excited about the full forward line, you know, the Canavans, McCurry, Matty Donnelly, and what they could do. I can't remember the last time like Tyrone had a forward line with that sort of quality. I was thinking, you know, we could match Kerry here for scores and output and even a bit of brilliance. Like, and you've seen Rory Canavan, what he can do. I mean, he was only 19, that little dummy and the point, that was the highlight of my whole weekend. It all went downhill after that. But it is hard to watch. It was really disappointing in the sense that, like, you can sort of take defeat. You can take it if you went out there and try to do what Tyrone can do and Kerry beat you. Like, there's no shame in that. They're the All-Ireland champions. But it definitely felt a little bit more like surrender rather than defeat. You know, it didn't feel like... And there are exceptions to that, because I actually thought Conor Myler did play very well, and I thought he put in a dogged performance with Paddy Clifford. It was very even, that matchup, and he never let his standards drop. And it's not that I think they went in there on purpose and whatever. I think Alan Brogan made a great point there. Don't know why I said your full name. But about getting it into the psyche, and that it's just going to be the same as it was last time in 2021, and we're going to be the ones that bring the game. And when they were put in the back foot, they maybe just weren't prepared for it.
Mm.
The game against Donegal may have been a little bit of a false dawn as well. Yeah. If you think, like, obviously Donegal are in a bit of disarray this year. They had a change of manager. They were beaten well up there by Tyrone, so maybe Tyrone felt like in fairness, Tyrone had only beaten Westmeath. Like drew at Westmeath.
Oh yeah, they drew. Yeah, should have lost.
So, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of Galway Mayo as well. Like, kind of Mayo better. Like, if we think about it, Galway team that was playing with Sean Kelly, who was injured, no doubt about it. Damien Cormann went off at half time, and Shane Walsh, who's had no form all year, really. So kind of Mayo's form probably wasn't great. It's nearly like we were hoping for these big games, but when you think about them afterwards, maybe we got it wrong. And I think, as pundits or whatever, I think everyone got it wrong, like, because everyone was talking about these two close games kind of going to the wire. It's a great opportunity for Tyrone, a great opportunity for Mayo. And as it turned out, it wasn't really.
No. It definitely wasn't, Lee, and I suppose it's disappointing, because you can't really pin the blame on any certain moment. Or like Rory Canavan coming off was a bit surprising, I thought, considering how well, like, he'd looked lively and had got two points. But, you know, Kerry were just, they were miles on top. Jack O'Connor had a bit of fun afterwards. He was referencing all the talk that Tyrone had the better midfield, and he said, even though the word is out there, all the Yeras out there, that we don't have a midfield, but we have great faith in the two lads, and Dermot O'Connor and Jack Barry. Obviously, Dermot O'Connor had a brilliant game, and that the skill he showed for that goal was brilliant. The way he stepped up and was able to step one lad and straight back in without losing his composure, that way. So that would be great for his confidence coming into it. One thing, I suppose, Tyrone hit a lot of kickouts short, so they didn't really test the Kerry midfielders in the air. So that was probably a confusing thing for Tyrone, considering the big men that they have there in midfield, Kilpatrick and Brian Kennedy.
Yeah, but you would sometimes put them into full forward, because we've got a small full forward. Liam Mary Donnelly actually drifts out. Colin Kilpatrick will go in, Brian Kennedy will go in, and every now and again. But, you know, they'll rotate, they won't like be over-reliant on it. And they just didn't do it at all.
I think they put one in and Jack Barry won it, I think. And it was like, was that the end of the first half, was it?
Yeah, it was right at the end, yeah.
That was a real big respect.
Even then, I think it was Peter Hart dropped short, but still, yeah, the fact that Patrick was there.
Like, I thought it was a big moment in the game. Like, here's, like, they've put one of the midfielders in, here's a long kick going in, which we hadn't seen a huge amount of, and Jack Barry won it. I was like, it was nearly like you expect something to come off that because they put the big full forward in. But I agree with you. That's like Matty Donnelly plays a kind of a roving full forward role. Like, he's not a real focal point in the way a Colin McShane can be. He'll stay deep and wait for the pass. And I thought they missed that, as I said at the start, particularly with the smaller lads around, the likes of McCurry, the likes of the two Canavans. They need a foil in there that can win a dirty ball, or even knock the dirty ball down to them that they can play off. And I thought they really missed that. They were living off scraps, really, to be honest with you. Even though you could, like, there's no doubt you can see their talent, and like Croke Park is made for them. And I think, like, on another day, we'll obviously see much better performance from the two lads and the two Canavans and McCurry. I'd say McCurry would be disappointed with kind of how he performed. He's obviously around a few years, and I'd imagine this was a big game for him. I think you could see the bit of frustration in him as well. Like that you see, he had a little dig towards the end, and then it showed him, like, a close up of him, and he's kind of puffing the cheeks out. You could see how disappointed he was. So it's tough. It's tough for Tyrone, but they learn a lot from him as well, especially the younger guys.
Yeah, they'll have to lick their wounds now for the winter, Lee. So best luck with that.
I'll not say a word the rest of the podcast now.
We'll move on to Armagh and Monaghan, which was the closest game of the weekend. Went, I suppose that was probably, you could have predicted that, really, with Armagh playing. It's always very tight. And another penalty shootout for them to lose. So definitely devastating for them that way. But listen, as we have to start this match, talking about Conor McManus. The coolest man in Croke Park, 36 years of age, came on and made so many huge plays, won the free straight away after getting cleaned out of it. And scored an absolute boomer of a free. But I suppose the biggest play he made was in the dying seconds of the game. Rian O'Neill had got that point, and it looks like the Armagh winner, and you think this is it now. Monaghan win the free. I'd say the one tactic that they would have had was, we're going to get this ball to Conor McManus. And he even said it, he was interviewed on GAA afterwards, and he was like, you know, I suppose I have that bit of experience, and I wouldn't have been looking for that ball maybe 10 years ago as a player. But even the composure he showed just to hold on to that ball, knowing that the foul was coming, maybe Armagh were silly, but...
Yeah, I thought we were a bit naive in how they defended. Like, there was no doubt they were going to look for Conor McManus, and he came on the loop and he got one-on-one with...
Grugan.
Yeah, with Grugan. And it was like, it was kind of a tangling of the legs, you could see, but maybe Rory Grugan should have stepped back a little bit and just let him, maybe he should have let him go, and he was probably going to get a shot off, but it would have been a difficult
under pressure,
whereas he just got tangled in his legs, and the referee was always going to give the free once he went down. But like Armagh had so many men back for the whole match, and all of a sudden Conor McManus in the last seconds manufactures this one-on-one situation.
And they had a free. So they had time to set up for this, Armagh did.
I don't know. Maybe they just dropped a little bit too deep, Armagh. But look, we might talk about it now, but I think Armagh are kind of they've no one to blame but themselves. They had the footballers to go and win that game. And like, I think if they had it pressed out at all, they wouldn't have too much for Monaghan. But it looked like they were so rigid in their defensive structure and how they played that they kind of played right into Monaghan's hands.
Well, that's the way they've been all year. Their games are always very tight, and this, I suppose, summed it up in that from the first minute to the 90th minute, neither of the teams led by more than 2 points. So it was a score. It was basically a chess match the whole way up. That Armagh, you were disappointed with the way they set up for the game, Alan?
Yeah, well, I think that, like, when I look at it, like, I could see how this, like, every time they lost the ball, they'd all come back and start inside the 45, and Look, I even thought where they defended was too deep. Like it gave opportunities. Like they kind of set up this kind of ring around the outside of the D, but it gave opportunity for Mono. We saw Conor McCarthy got their first score from outside where their press zone was. Like they need, even the way they played, I thought they needed to be an extra 5 or 10 yards out so that they could stop those long range shots. But even aside from that, I thought, like, I understand if they're playing against Dublin or against Kerry and you need to park the bus for a while to stay in the game or whatever. But I think you need to have, at some stage, you need to show a bit of faith in your players. Say, okay, look, we can go and we can play a game of football with Monaghan. We have better players. We think we can beat them. But they never tried to press Monaghan at all. They never pushed up really at all. And if they got a point ahead, as you say, it was nearly like, right, we're a point ahead. You try and get an equaliser. And we'll defend until you get an equaliser. And then we'll try and go get one ahead again. And both teams were like that. And like, it's a bit disappointing. And look, a great time for Kieran McGeaney. Played with him international rules, and he's a great GA man, knows his football, there's no doubt about it. They have Kieran Donaghy there as well, but why not just go for the juggler? This is an odd, like, many regrets are they going to have now today, thinking if we had done it a different way, we'd be in an All-Ireland semi-final today, and it's disappointing.
Do you think as well, as like you sort of mentioned, that like Tyrone maybe took too much from the Donegal game and that win, Armagh, maybe that win over Galway, as massive as it was and as big as it was for them, it more just cemented that actually we are doing this the right way. Do you know, like the win, and even that came down to Shane Walsh missing a free at the end, otherwise that would have been a draw. So they maybe read too much into it, but I don't know why. Well, maybe you can explain, sorry, because like when they set up like that and they're so condensed, they're trying to force them out wide and into positions where if they do shoot, it's from, you know, not scoring zones, as they say, but like surely scoring zones is relative to the person. And nowadays, you know, like Conor McCarthy's scoring zone's a lot better than a lot of other ones. I know they're playing him at halfback, but really he's a half forward. It doesn't work anymore, just setting up completely zonal. You know, you have to.
No, that's a minute. Where they positioned themselves wrong, because it gave Conor McCarthy the opportunity to shoot. Where if they'd have pushed out under 5 or 10 yards, he probably would have been a bit too far out to take the shot on. So then you have to come into the tackle, try and beat a man, or kind of try and get a runner off to try and force an opportunity. So it was. I didn't even think they even did it that well, to be honest with you, when they set up defensively.
Yeah.
But I don't think they should have been playing like that. Like, I understand going defensively, but I think they had the footballers with Rian O'Neill, with like to get more scores, like 14 points for the forwards that Armagh have to score 14 points in however long the game, the extra time was, whatever, 190 minutes or whatever, is a terrible return for the standard of forward they have. And it's like, if I was Rian O'Neill or somebody on my forwards, I'd be thinking, God, this is a bit frustrating now, being forced to play like this so rigidly, with what's on the line there, a chance of an All-Ireland semi-final. They would have had a crack at the Dubs and Croke Park in an All-Ireland semi-final. I'd say they'd have lots of regrets.
Even not starting Conor Turbitt, that was like a statement right from the start. Like he's an out and out forward, you know, but they decided to leave him on the bench, and that was just sort of telling you from the start
what way they were going to play.
Well, one moment that just summed it up for me was 54 minutes gone, they were a point down, and I'm not sure who it was that put the ball in, but Rory Grugan was breaking in on down the right wing, and he's bearing down on Rory Beggan's goal, and they're a point down, and like the chance is there, like you definitely have the chance to take the shot, and he fists it over the bar to bring it back to a level game, and you're just thinking, like, how do you not take that chance on? But it sums up the attitude, that the way they've been playing is that it's just, we'll get 1 point, or we'll keep it level, or we'll get one ahead and we'll keep it tight. But when you're playing a game like that, you're leaving it down to, it's nearly down to chance to the very last minute that you're going to be either ahead, just that coincidentally the clock is going to come and you're going to win, a bit like the time with Galway. Like, it's just...
You're leaving too much to chance playing like that. It's disappointing.
I mean, with like that Rory Grugan one, I suppose that kind of summed it up. But how, like, when you're just going for this 1 point, and then you kind of sit back, and we'll sit back, and you can get you see if you can get your point back. I don't know. It's disappointing, and definitely hugely disappointing for Armagh. But I suppose, listen, lads, Monaghan, we've been talking about them all year. About, they've now won. They've won four, this is the fourth game this year that they've got a result with the very last play of the game. So it was the Ryan O'Toole goal versus Tyrone. None of us will forget that. They were 2 points down. He had to go for it that time.
Yeah.
Or no, they weren't 2 points down. They were 1 point down, and he could have fisted it over, but he buried it. He went for the win when the chance was there. Carol O'Connell got a leveler against Derry, last kick of the game. Conor McCarthy against Kildare just last week. And this time it comes down to whether it's Conor McManus's last kick or Rory Beggin's last save from Callum Comiskey. Monaghan just have unbelievable reserves of character in that team. Finny Corey was very magnanimous, I thought, after the match. He said, "We didn't win the match. We won a penalty shootout." Which was, I suppose, it was just a nice way of taking it. But he was full of praise as well for, and of course he was, for them Monaghan Warriors. I mean, he said, "They're warriors. You had Darren Hughes and Carol O'Connell, 35, 36 years of age. We took Carol off because he got a bang on the back of the head. He wanted to get back in. Them boys are built for it." He said, "Then you have Manzi. He's the ultimate clutch player, probably Monaghan's best ever clutch player, and he's done it again." And I suppose you look at McManus, Hughes and O'Connell. McManus himself said that he admires O'Connell and Hughes. They have two or three kids at home and they're still making it in for Monaghan training, you know. So you've probably played against them a few times.
They've always been like that. Like Monaghan, right from early in my career, like they've always been really tough to beat. Like under when Pillar Caffrey's in charge, we used to play, if he wanted a challenge, Monaghan was the go-to team for a challenge.
Really?
Because he knew the battle you'd get off. And like a lot of challenge matches, kind of early season challenge matches, there's probably not as many anymore, but when we were playing, they could be timid enough affairs. You start with 15, you roll in subs and stuff. But we used to play challenge matches against Monaghan, and we could play two or three in a season because he knew no matter what, when we went up there, they came down to us, there was always going to be the battle. I remember there was one match abandoned, one friendly. We were playing out in St. David's and it was abandoned because it just got too messy. But then that was a challenge match. So they always bring that to the table, whether it's challenge matches or whether it's league games or whether it's our Ireland quarterfinals in Croke Parks. You know what you're going to get with them. And it was a dangerous game that Armagh played, because you know Monaghan are going to stick with you. If you leave
they'll
them in the game,
yeah,
they'll stick with you. They'll keep going. They'll find an opportunity. And he said they have players like Conor McManus that if there's one or two in it, he can come in. And he's there's only a few players in the country could come into a game like Conor McManus did and make that sort of impact, like between landing his freeze, winning the freeze, getting the scoring kick from play. Like it was, like I just said, it was a brilliant performance. So if you leave them in the game, they're that sticky that they will, that they could catch it. And kind of yesterday they did, but like I said, they've always had that kind of tradition. They're always up for the fight, they're always up for the battle, and yesterday they came out on top because of it.
Yeah, well, they'd have had that belief, wouldn't they? Even mm-hmm. just looking at last week, beating Kildare in such a tight game, beating Tyrone earlier in the year in such a tight game, when it came down to it, whether it was the end of the 70 minutes or the end of the 90 minutes, when you get into that winning habit, I'd say, Alan, winning tight games, you don't think you're going to lose.
No, you don't. And you know how to create the opportunity as well, I think. And they're kind of well used to being in those sort of games. So you could see, like, they never panicked even when they went to score down at the end. It looked like time was up. It looked like Armagh were defending with so many men back that just they'll never even create an opportunity here. But they had that composure to wait for, to play it around, wait for Conor McManus to come on the loop and kind of one sidestep, and he was through. So yeah, no, you're right. Whilst they're always up for the battle and stuff, they do show
remarkable composure, I suppose.
The composure in that, the kind of dying seconds of games to be able to manufacture scores and manufacture opportunities to get themselves wins or draws. So
yeah.
They're not completely reliant as well on the older guard. Obviously, no. They're massive. But, like, you know, Gary Mohan's a young lad and he scored 3 points from play. He was up and down. You know, he took his penalty. His second one well. Conor McCarthy must only be
26 or 7.
Something like, you know, coming into his prime now.
He has stepped up big
time.
Yeah,
massively. That's what I'm saying. And now they've got their minors are in the All-Ireland final. So there's, you know, I think there's more good days to come from Monaghan. It isn't so much as a last hurrah, just more of a statement that this is who we are and what we'll always be.
Did you see the shootout? The camera panned to their five kickers beforehand and the boys were just so relaxed. Like Gary Mohan was there smiling and Kieran Hughes was smiling and I doubt the Armagh lads were smiling. Like.
Yeah, and that was, I suppose they've got the last minute score, last second score, so that gives you that bit of euphoria coming over. Like, whereas Armagh coming off the field with a bit of disappointment, how do we let that slip? So,
and knowing they've lost three penalty shootouts as well.
Yeah, true beforehand, yeah. So this is probably playing in the back of the mind. And look, most of the penalties were of top quality. To be fair, they were really, really good. But yeah, look, I think the rule that it's the same five lads is a bit of a strange rule. I think once it goes into sudden death, you should be moving down the rest of the panel, and like, it's obviously tough on the guys that miss. But I suppose that was probably the most entertaining part, was the penalties at the end. Kind of, it probably saved us from the actual game, to be honest, which is having that drama towards the end.
Yeah, I did not expect them Monaghan lads to miss. Like, just looking at Conor McManus, he was never going to miss penalty. Kieran Hughes, his penalties were probably the best of them. He shaved the post. His second one was absolutely perfect. Yeah. Like, what's the fella's name? Oisin, that came on and hit the one for Armagh. They were saying he played soccer in the Northern Ireland League. Oisin Connaughty. He hit the first one. He hit, just rolled it down. It was like a soccer penalty. It was brilliant stuff. And
Jack McCarron,
yeah.
He expect him to dispatch a penalty. Like,
yeah, and he put the second one down the middle, as did Gary Moan. The two of them were... Gary Moan's second one now, it was tidy tipping there.
Well, I'm not sure if he was going for the middle now. I'd say he was edgy stepping up to it now.
Yeah, had to be.
I'd say he was a relieved man now when it went in, yeah.
He definitely was. And Callum Comiskey, you'd feel for him, like, as you said, Alan, it's that it comes back twice.
And
it makes it so
the
tough.
They
did,
well.
But you probably wouldn't blame them because they knew he'd
But who
missed.
Did that? Like, was it him? Do you know what I mean?
It was probably between either them or the management. I seen someone had a picture up on Twitter, and Kieran Donaghy could hardly even look at the penalty shootout. He had like his back turned to it. He was so nervy. It was tough on Comiskey because he was their only one that scored in the Ulster final in the penalty shootout, and then missed
two. Looked edgy. It's a lot to put on. It's a lot to put on. Like, if you miss your first and you're coming back for your second, like, that is, with what's at stake there, like, that is a huge... that's a lot to put on somebody. That's why that's a rule that should probably be looked at. If it goes to sudden death, let it go down to the team, because it is strange.
It is strange. And poor Kieran McGeaney after the game, like, he was barely able to talk. Like, he had the cap on, and I was reading reports that said you could barely hear him from a few yards away. He was just said, you know, that's sport, and sport is cruel. And I suppose it was cruel for Armagh. Monaghan take the win, and they're through to an All-Ireland semi-final against Dublin, and it's definitely going to be, you know, Dublin you'd expect would have too much class for them, but they'll turn it into a battle, Alan, that's for sure. Just we've one more game to talk about, is the Derry Cork game. Derry won by 4 points, probably went along expected lines. It was, you thought maybe before half time, when Cork got their little surge, came from 6-2 down and got back to 6-5, you're thinking back to their win over Roscommon, and you're thinking, are Cork, are they coming again? But it was credit to Derry that they kind of banished those hopes fairly instantly, in that they scored the first 4 points of the second half. And I know Cork did get a goal, but Derry gobbled them up within 54 seconds. They went down and got the other goal. So... Cork, like, they were thereabouts early on, will probably rue some early wise at that.
I fell for Cork now, because they did fight hard to get back into the game, and Maguire got the goal. He's been in some form for a fullback, modern game, as we talk about. And, you know, he gave it a big celebration and gave it a lift, and even watching
he blew kisses to the crowd.
I know,
it was brilliant. You don't see that too often anymore.
It was brilliant.
Because even watching it, you got a bit flat, just because, you know, it was a bit dull. And then for about 54 seconds, you know, and then it was Doherty got the goal down the other. And what a finish it was, to be fair.
Class.
It was brilliant. But that just sort of killed the game again. I was like, all right, okay, we're just back to where we were.
wasn't that some finish from Rory Maguire?
He was going full belt as well.
Slowing down.
Even to see the keeper off his line, like, it was a beautiful finish. But I think Cork were probably, and when they look back at it, like, and if it, like, a team learns a lot along the way. Like, it was just a bit naive to concede a goal so quick after.
Yeah.
Like, next time or next year, say, right, if we concede a goal, just batten down the hatches for a couple of minutes, and let's make sure we stay in the game, because it was nearly like he'd come from full back or the half back line or whatever. He'd done a bit of a celebration, and you might think of it, but those celebrations take it out of you. Like, when you come back, next thing you're gasping for breath after so much emotion, so much adrenaline, and then you have to stop and play again, and all of a sudden you're knackered. We actually stopped it, like, even Colin Pascal's goal yesterday, like that was as his second goal. I think he kind of came out with the hands out. That was as much of a celebration I've seen from a Dublin player after a goal in a long time. Like, and remember with Jim Gavin, under Pat Gilroy first, actually, when Pillar was in charge, we were fond of an old celebration. But when Pat got involved, it was like, lads, stop that nonsense. Once you get a goal, get back out and get back into the full forward line. You're looking to shut down the short kick out, you know, whereas Cork probably might have overdone it a little bit. Yeah. And then they just weren't set up right for when Terry attacked them quick off the kick out, you know. But they learned from that. But as you said, the game kind of went the way we'd expect. Kind of Cork never really got close enough to really think that they were, barred obviously that goal. Yeah. They never really got close enough to for me to really feel like, right, there might be an upset in the cards here. But in saying that, I think Cork will be happy enough for how the year panned out, like from where they've come from to where they finished up this year to and kind of like they forced Derry to come out and win the game, certainly put them under a bit of pressure. Probably not having Brian Hurley on the field from the start, probably might be coming back from an injury or whatever. Like a team like Cork, they need the marquee forward like him on the field, even if he's not scoring, just the attention, the distraction, and the attention that he demands off opposition defenders. Is they just don't have anyone of that caliber, so they probably missed him on the field of play. But I think it's a positive year from Cork, and I would have expected Derry to be in the semi final.
Was that tough to hold the celebration back? Would you even give a wag of the finger?
You'd have to give a little wag so Pat Gilroy didn't see you doing it.
Hide it on this side of your body.
But I remember back in 2002, like when Ray Cosgrove scored the 6 goals, like if you watch back that on YouTube, like he had a celebration for every, I think at one stage he shot a few bow and arrows into the top of the Cusick stand and stuff. So it was great stuff. But I was good to see it. Like, and look at Colin Pascal, like to get 2 goals in an All-Ireland quarterfinal, that's something to be celebrating, especially second one probably killed the game. So I wouldn't begrudge him now celebration back out. But there's no doubt it does. Like if you get caught up in the euphoria of that moment in a big game, as you can see yesterday, you can get caught, and Cork unfortunately paid the ultimate price. Kind of Derry were experienced enough and could move the ball at that pace because they hadn't created much up to that. And all of a sudden Cork just took the eye off the ball for a second, and kind of Derry were through for the goal, and that was probably game over then once they conceded so soon after their own goal.
Yeah, so it was actually told to you, like, cut out that celebrations.
Much cut out celebration. It was more to get back into that you're set
switch
up like,
on quickly.
Yeah, like at that time the short kickouts were starting. So if you turned your back for a second, like if you turned your back on Stephen Clough or any of the goalies now, like as soon as that ball's in the net, but the goalkeeper's out and the play is gone again. So if you're doing the old bow and arrows into the top of the Cusick stand, like,
yeah.
I think Cosy went round the goal at one stage as well. Against Donegal, and he went round the back. It was a Hill 16 goal around the back, like, and into the hill. Like, should the ball be out and up the other end of the field if you're at that?
Do you think it should be like soccer? They should do like a
give it time
a throw in again.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'll allow fella celebrate. Yeah.
And then you have to set up again. Although they'll set up all different.
You could be over into the corner flag and everything. Then.
Yeah, we'd bring it doing the old bowling alley. Cleaning the shoe. I'd love to see that. Yeah.
That's a good call, actually. Yeah, after the goal, we have to have a 30-second break to allow for the celebration. Yeah.
We'd see what Maguire would have really done, like if he knew he'd.
See, it was perfect for him because he was running and he had the momentum. When you have the arc coming around, he was just there going.
His first goal against Leash, it was 2005, maybe. I think Conal Keane, you're right, I might have slipped him a hand pass, and he got in and he finished right in the corner. But he was going full bend towards the hill. So as soon as he kicked it, he still had that momentum that he could keep going on the arc around. He came back out around the Cusick stand. And he was playing wing forward at the time. And he got back to his position. Like, and straight away, he's down on the hunker trying to get his breath back. But it wasn't the run. It was the celebration that knocked the stuffing out of him.
He'd done a whole victory lap.
He did.
It's gas. Colin Pascal now could be dropped the next day for his wild celebrations after that first goal or that second goal. Yeah, I suppose it was. Sure, that was the turning point of that game. It was it was 54 seconds, and disappointing for Cork was McCluskey, who was unbelievable on the ball. Yeah. He made the break, got through, set up Doherty, who finished it a bit like Dermot O'Connor's one for Kerry. Unbelievable composure. But look, it was a very Derry-like performance. Like, Garrett McInnes was brilliant. Brendan Rodgers kind of blotted Ian Maguire out of the game. Ethan Doherty, Paul Cassidy chipped in with their customary scores. it was fairly standard from Derry, even though Shane McGuigan wasn't on fire, but they didn't really need him. And from a Cork perspective, as Alan said, they won't be too disappointed with the year. Maybe disappointed with how the last 15 minutes petered out after that Rory Maguire goal. But, you know, they've had a positive year and have definitely upped the ante a small bit. So, look, it's hurling next weekend, but we're back in 2 weeks and there's only four left standing now. So Dublin, Monaghan, Kerry, Derry and the Talchic Cup final, Meath and Down in 2 weeks' time. A lot to look forward to. And we're definitely looking forward to them. So, look, thanks a million to Alan for coming in. Thanks to Lee and thanks to our sponsors. Sure, 72-hour protection today and we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Sure. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Sure, it won't let you down.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.